At the top of the program, highly controversial comments made recently by an MSU professor continue to be a topic of discussion, both locally and beyond. Last week, Professor William Penn sparked an intense backlash after a video surfaced of him suggesting Republicans had raped the country and included many closet racists. A student attending the lecture told MLive that Penn also denigrated Christians and athletes. Last Thursday, the university barred Penn from teaching for the rest of the semester. President Luana Simon said Penn's remarks were out of bounds. The incident has triggered a discussion involving two key features of university life: civility and respect on one hand, and academic freedom and due process on the other. Now, when I left WKAR on Friday afternoon, we had scheduled to open the show with MSU trustee Mitch Lyons, who supports the removal of Professor Penn from the classroom. We had hoped that Mitch Lyons would be able to update the situation in some way with regard to the discussion that's going on amongst the MSU trustees, et cetera, et cetera. And I think he was of the impression that he would be able to do that. I got a text message from Mitch Lyons at 10 to 7 this morning. Mark, not in a position to comment further on the Penn case, so I won't be able to do the interview. Further information is forthcoming, and I don't want to comment until then. Sorry for the late notice. Was hoping to have an update, Mitch Lyons. I reached back to Mitch. I made the case that there is still value in revisiting what's already happened. It did not work out. He has not returned my calls. I will also go to the extent to say that we reached out to President Luana Simon, to Trustee Joel Ferguson, and to Trustee Diane Byram, all very feverishly here in about the last 50 minutes or so, maybe the last hour or so. All of those efforts have come to naught. And I say that as a setup because our first guest this morning, May Kirkendall, and I were planning on discussing whatever it was that Trustee Lyons or any of these other folks might have to say in terms of an update or in terms of revisiting the basics of what has happened here at Michigan State involving Professor Penn. Alas, we do not have any of those folks. So with that as a preamble, I welcome May Kirkendall to WKAR. May is the president of the MSU chapter of the American Association of University Professors. Nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you for asking me. I hope I'm not unusually foolish in accepting your invitation, but I have a great deal of confidence in the academic freedom of the university. I think maybe there's been a misstep here, but I'm here because I trust and believe in this university as one of the citadels of academic freedom.
Well, let's revisit what happened on Friday. First of all, your group did issue a statement Friday afternoon suggesting that the university had acted too quickly, removing Professor Penn from the classroom. How so?
Okay, I think I'd like to preface my answer in the way that a professor might to at least explain what the principles of academic freedom are and the role of my organization, the American Association of University Professors, in trying to explain, advance, defend academic freedom. So what I would like to explain is that academic freedom is a strong norm of a great university, and it is for the benefit and protection of all of society, is not so much for the individual protection of a professor, but because the professor's ability to speak freely needs to be clearly always there, unless the professor does something so out of bounds that after very careful process it's determined that the person is not really exercising academic freedom, but behaving in ways that are outside the bounds of the professorial duty. So we may need to talk a little bit more about why people are so quickly assuming that what he was doing was outside the bounds of the topic of his course.
Do you have any ideas as to why?
Well, I'm hoping I can defer a little bit and explain first more about how this is protection for the student in particular. But my understanding is that the course is Literatures, Cultures, Identities.
Right.
It's an English course, English department course. He is a novelist. He is not actually a PhD purveying standard English department theory about literature. He is a creative writer. He's a fiction writer, and his classes are about creative writing. So I have his syllabus, and I have some of his explanations to students of what he's undertaking to do. One of the backgrounds I understand about his use of the term rape was that he had given them the original derivation of the term rape and what it means, and that he was using it a bit extravagantly in the context of what its original meaning is. And it had to do with not Republicans so much as just sort of one interpretation of our history going back to, the settling of the country. But I'm not capable of fully explaining what he was doing because it's his class and it's his pedagogy. So what a professor does, who's a good professor and a good teacher, is that they try to take risk. Part of our job is to be willing to take a risk. And in order to be a teacher, people try gambits, so to speak, to engage the class. I believe this happened on the – I know it happened on the first day of class, and he was showing them a little bit about a form of hyperbolic speech. I mean, that's one understanding of what he was up to.
Doesn't this type of speech, though, fly directly in the face of another feature of the university landscape, and that is support for civility and respect for all groups? You must have an awful lot of members who feel terribly conflicted about this.
We have yes, people are capable of forming a variety of opinions, but back to due process, none of us knows that much about the premises of the class, exactly, you know, the setting of one short videotape, what he had said before.
Seven minutes, right?
7 minutes is not a good representation of a whole semester and what the person is attempting to do with certain forms of extravagant speech about what we would have to concede is a kind of identity. Remember that the subject of the class is identities. But I don't want to totally discuss what he was doing and try to interpret it because, of course, he's the person best able to do that. And some of his students who really love the man and love his course are good at interpreting that for us.
I've got to ask you a question that I wanted to ask Trustee Mitch Lyons.
All right.
If Professor Penn had said, unions have raped Detroit.
Right.
They're cheap. They've gotten their extravagant salaries,
right,
their lifetime health benefits, and it, and if MSU removed him from the class, would you be here? Would you have issued the statement you did on Friday,
yes,
if he had said that?
Thank you very much for that question. In point of fact, not to make much reference myself, but people suspect me of not being, you know, in the corner of some of the identity-based scholarship and that sort of thing. But the whole group has, in its history, the AUP frequently defended conservative professors. Let me go to the strong principle of academic freedom, which is that professors are to be free to engage the students with ideas, and their ideas can be expressed in a whole range of types of expression. And so long as it relates to their subject and they haven't gone truly beyond the bounds of civilized discourse within the tradition of civilization, which is a long one, then they have the protections of academic freedom. So I can tell you without hesitation that I would be on the front lines to protect a conservative professor. I have tried to recruit conservative professors into the English, what department am I in? The law department. I believe in a full range of voices that are robust and are willing to be forthright and, challenge people. I want to make you know that he always in his syllabus tells students, I'm going to say things that may offend you. And if I do, let me know and I will apologize to you. I also know, through having tried to make sure I know a little something, that he had apologized already on Tuesday. His first class, I believe, was on Thursday. He didn't know about the flap. He taught the class on Tuesday. And the student to whom he had said, are you frowning, he decided that that was a gambit that didn't work. You know, professors use little gambits. And in a class of 400, you want to make it more human and to have some interaction with people. But he went and found that student Tuesday morning and directly apologized and said, that didn't work well, and I'm really sorry that I did that. So I want to emphasize to you that he's a creative writer, a fiction writer, who experiments with ways of engaging the class. One way you can do that is to say outrageous things. And so I do believe that he is a person who follows norms of civility. He has ideas about how to engage students that sometimes crash and burn and sometimes work very well.
See, it's just so, again, it just gets back to this notion, though, that there is such an emphasis in this institution on civility and respect. And his comments, a lot of people are going to say his comments flew in the face of that. You've got blinding force meeting immovable object. Which one gives?
Well, I don't think that...
Isn't that a fair way to look at
it? The norm of civility is something that is sort of precatory in a way. So you can't try to enforce the norm of civility by micromanaging or fly-specking an individual to say, you're not quite our sort. The way you express yourself is too vivid. It's too challenging for our students. Our students can't handle that. They're a little delicate. And so they're not capable of doing what this professor was challenging them to do, which is to hear things they don't ordinarily hear, respond to them, don't think that they are deprived of voice. Don't think they are deprived of voice. Hear his voice and respond. But I think it's important now, we talked about due process. I don't want to get too enmeshed in our – see, one of my colleagues wrote me, who's kind of – what you could call a company guy, you know, he tends to want to be with the administration, wrote me when I sent them our statement and wrote, trial by YouTube should be frightening to all of us. So this is a form of trial by YouTube, and it's not in any way consistent with an idea of academic due process. So let me talk to you a little bit about academic due process.
Let me ask you the next question. We don't have that. I think you've made your point adequately here. What does it say that behavior that gets a professor pulled from the classroom can only be shared with the public at a public university by a student sneaking a video camera into a classroom? Doesn't that make a powerful case that there needs to be more scrutiny on the content of what professors have to say?
I think there is a lot of scrutiny. We have an evaluation process that occurs yearly for every professor here.
Why wasn't this already on the radar, though? This got him pulled from the classroom.
I think I could ask you, by contrast, the fact that he has not been pulled means that careful deliberation about his teaching has resulted in he's received a Distinguished Teaching Award. So the faculty in looking at what he does has consistently thought that there is value in it and that he's controversial, but that controversy is not something we should fear. I do want to make sure you understand that due process within the American Academy is always supposed to depend upon faculty input. Faculty groups are supposed to be involved in hiring. Administrators are to act on the basis of faculty input. Let me read this to you. At well-run colleges and universities, faculty exercise significant influence over areas including research, the curriculum, subjects and methods of instruction, and faculty status. Now, let me say, such as hiring, promotion, and discipline. Boards and administrators rely on faculty advice in making academic decisions. So in this case, so far as we're aware, there's been no faculty input. And it's important also to understand that suspension of a professor from his teaching responsibilities is considered a severe form of discipline. The fact that the salary has continued doesn't take away the fact that he has been deprived of his primary mission as a professor. I don't want to just
let me try to take another tact here. This has been an opportunity to witness a whole lot of vitriol online.
Right.
Arguably, people at their partisan worst. Trustee Lyons has been called some awful things online.
Well, let me express respect for Trustee Lyons, but I would want him to hear me and hear that I think he's off on the wrong track. I say that respectfully.
But Professor Penn and his defenders have been called some awful things too.
Correct.
Okay, so there's
yeah, it's
partisan politics at its ugliest.
I agree.
Let's take a more institutional look at this thing. How destructive has this episode been?
The episode, if it's not handled well, is massively destructive. If the episode is handled better than I think it's been handled so far, we would have a public forum, maybe with a whole group of people with different perspectives discussing academic freedom. I'd be glad to participate. I'd be glad to have other people participate, because we want the people who think he should be yanked from his class to understand the stakes. If you can do something in such a summary fashion, the AAUP's national standard is that a professor cannot be suspended from teaching without a faculty hearing unless dismissal is in prospect and there's a threat of immediate harm. That was the first impulse I had without even looking at the standards, that to take him out of the classroom doesn't make any sense because there's no threat of immediate harm. Why would it be a crisis? It would be because you think the students are in danger from somebody. There is no danger here other than to some sensibilities by students who may not be fully comprehending what he is telling them that he's going to do. His syllabus explains to them that he's here to potentially upset them, and that's what you need to have happen to you in the course of your learning. You need to have things said to you that maybe shock you, and then you try to integrate it into your own set of worldviews, your capacity to think, your capacity to debate, and your ability to face a world in which there is going to be vigorous debate and people who have more or less ability to express themselves trenchantly.
Duly noted. What do you say to people, however, though, who say this easily qualifies as hate speech, number one, and even worse, publicly subsidized hate speech? For some people, I think your appeals to due process increasingly may fall on deaf ears just because of the what some people would say are just the gratuitous abuse. Is there no way to provoke a student short of what some people regard as hate speech?
Well, first, I find it ironic if the conservative folks are beginning to say we want to throw him out for hate speech, because it's one of the iconic understandings among the conservative side of the spectrum that hate speech rules on a campus violate the First Amendment, and that they tend to intimidate people who want to speak openly, and that, you know, they're like thought control. So the whole idea of hate speech as something we control on campuses has been somewhat rejected, certainly by the conservatives end of the spectrum, because they are the ones who fear that they're going to be squelched. I mean, they're the ones who maybe fear it more than others. Now we see that you can get squelched on either side of the spectrum. Mm. So hate speech is a very dangerous concept that the academy has been chastised by the right side of the spectrum for embracing. I wish I could remember the last part of, because I had something else to say.
We're just about out of time.
But anyway, I want to say it was not hate speech. It was an example within a complicated course about literary forms of speech. He explains to them about Plato, so forth and so on. And so the idea of merely unthinkingly attributing it to him as an individual is a mistake. Classrooms are used for experimental language. I'll stop, because I can see you want to.
Well, briefly, let's try to wrap up on this note. Do you think some form of due process is about to unfold here? What lay ahead?
Well, we are urging the administration to, to do a reset. And I guess one of the resets I might ask for is let's try to come together as a community to make sure that people really understand the stakes in demanding that this man be yanked from his job. And I'm not talking about him as an individual. I'm talking about the chill that it would place on everyone. Professors are brave, but they're not that brave. So people are going to dial back the ways that they try to challenge and engage their class. People experiment with all kinds of ways of doing it. I sometimes tease a student, not much because I don't want to do anything that could be misread. But a year ago, I did a little more teasing than I thought I should have, and I worried about it.
Okay.
And I apologized, but it was, you know, soft teasing, and it was at U of M, so you can do that.
Point taken. May Kirkendall is the president of the MSU chapter of the American Association of University Professors. Thanks for coming in, May.
Thank you.